Our topic while together this time is chapter 9 of the first canto. The chapter is entitled The Passing Away of Bhishma Dev. We're going to have 9 sessions together this evening, 3 tomorrow, 3 the next day, and 1 in the morning. I've thought different things of how to begin. I'm torn between spending this evening just describing who is Bhishma Dev. Not that we don't know, but hearing in detail. On the other side I'm leaning towards is just cover some of the first verses of the first canto, of this chapter 9, first canto, and something about Bhishma Dev, and continue tomorrow morning. And I'm kind of leaning that way because it is Srimad Bhagavatam. The details of Bhishma Dev's life are found in Mahabharata. And we've discussed this before, that there's a very strong relationship between Mahabharata and Srimad Bhagavatam, because the Mahabharata is the history of Greater India and the Bhagavatam is descriptions of Bhagavan, Krishna and his various incarnations. And Krishna is a core personality in Mahabharata. Emphasis, the distinction is, the emphasis in Mahabharata primarily, along with introducing Krishna, it's primarily on the side of ethics. How to lead your life in this world in a moral and ethical way. In relation to Krishna. And the Bhagavatam, the approach of the Srimad Bhagavatam, is Bhagavad Dharma. The essential importance of me filling your life with hearing and chanting the topics of the personality of Godhead and becoming fixed upon the personality of Godhead as the goal of life. So our whole disciplic succession is more centered on Srimad Bhagavatam, not eliminating Mahabharata, but more centered on Srimad Bhagavatam. And so I believe we'll begin just describing some of the initial verses of the chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. The chapter has a few major sections. This first section is receiving Bhishma Dev on the battlefield. Pandavas and Krishna go by the side of Bhishma Dev in his passing. he receives them and the, so many sages that come. The second, Bhishma Dev's instructions to pacify Yudhisthira. The third section is Yudhisthira's question and Bhishma Dev's answer about the duties of a king. And the final section is Bhishma Dev leaves. So within the instructions to pacify Yudhisthira and the instructions to describe the duties of a king, we'll spend most of our time in that area. Very, very fine, wonderful instructions. Chapter 9 begins with Sutta Goswami narrating to the sages of Naimisharanya, headed by Shonaka Rishi. He's explaining, being afraid for having killed so many subjects on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Maharaj Yudhisthira went to the scene of the massacre. There, Bhishma Dev was lying on a bed of arrows, about to pass away. So the scene is set. They're on the battlefield. Bhishma Dev is still on the battlefield. This is after the battle has been over. Some days have passed. Yudhisthira has been installed on the throne. The verses describe by Krishna's arrangement, they've gone there specifically to enthuse Grandfather Bhishma. They're wearing royal attire. They come on royal chariots. What Bhishma Dev wanted all along in the whole intrigue against the Pandavas and the Kauravas, he wanted that Yudhisthira become the king. He was rightfully the king, and he wanted that which is rightful to happen. And now it's happened. So although he's in this terribly painful condition, Krishna's plan was to enthuse Grandfather Bhishma. In the purports, it gives three specific reasons why Krishna personally accompanied the Pandavas in the way that it was orchestrated. The purport of this first verse gives a little summary of the whole chapter. In this ninth chapter, as it is willed by Lord Sri Krishna, Bhishma Dev will impart instructions to King Yudhisthira on the subject of occupational duties. So, the next sentence is the first of the three reasons why Krishna accompanied the Pandavas. Because Bhishma Dev could have instructed Yudhisthira without Krishna present. So Bhishma Dev will also offer his last prayer to the Lord on the verge of passing away from this mortal world and thus become liberated from the bondage of further material engagements. In the to satisfy the desire of his devotee, Bhishma Dev, Krishna personally came. It's very similar to Haridas Thakur and his request of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that I don't want to see your closing pastime, your departing from this world. I've only asked you ever one thing, and here it is. The one thing I ask is that I would like to leave this world before you. And as I leave this world, I want to see your beautiful face. I want you to place your foot upon my chest. And I want to leave this body calling out your name, Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Sri Krishna Chaitanya. And so, the passing of Grandfather Bhishma was like that. It was his desire to see the beautiful lotus face of Krishna. So Krishna personally came to satisfy the desire of Bhishma so that he could give up his body in that condition. Bhishma Dev was endowed with the power of leaving his material body at will. And his lying down on the bed of arrows was his own choice. When somebody gets shot full of so many arrows, it's not generally their choice. But it was Bhishma Dev's choice. There were events, which we'll describe, which he chose. He chose to tell the Pandavas how he could be defeated, because otherwise it was looking pretty grim for the Pandavas. As long as Grandfather Bhishma stands, we can't be victorious. So one evening they went to the tent of Grandfather Bhishma, and with folded hands they asked Grandfather Bhishma, "How can we kill you? Can you disclose how that can be done?" "Oh, sure." And he narrated the whole story of Shikhandi, and you just put Shikhandi right in front of your armies. I'm not going to fight. Bed of arrows. He could have chosen another. He chose that one. This passing away of the great warrior attracted the attention of all the contemporary elites, and all of them assembled there to show their feelings of love, respect, and affection for the great soul. And Krishna also. Krishna wanted to show to the world that in a number of different ways he wanted to show his affection, love, and attachment for Grandfather Bhishma, despite the fact that Grandfather Bhishma fought on the side of the Kauravas. Despite the fact that Grandfather Bhishma took a vow that he would kill Arjuna, despite the fact that Grandfather Bhishma did not defend Draupadi, despite seeming discrepancies in character, Krishna accepted Grandfather Bhishma as his wonderful devotee. Krishna wanted to demonstrate and show to Grandfather Bhishma his love and affection for him. Text number 2. At that time, all his brothers, that's Yudhisthira, all his brothers followed him on beautiful chariots drawn by first-class horses decorated with gold ornaments. With them were Vyas and rishis like Daumya, the learned priest of the Pandavas, and others. O sage amongst the Brahmanas, Lord Sri Krishna, the personality of God, it also followed. Following Yudhisthira, seated on a chariot with Arjuna. Thus Yudhisthira appeared very aristocratic, like Kuvera, surrounded by his companions, the Guyakas. And so here's now the third reason why Krishna personally came. Lord Sri Krishna wanted the Pandavas to be present before Bhishma Dev in the most aristocratic order, so that he might be pleased to see them happy at the time of his death. Bhishma Dev acted like the grandfather of the Pandavas. In the absence of their father, he was like their father, the grandfather. So, just like the father or grandfather wants to see the success of his son or grandson, Krishna wanted Bhishma Dev to see the success. I mentioned this earlier, it's another way of saying the same thing. He wanted to see the Pandavas ruling because it was just that they rule. But it was more than, it was justice plus. Plus his affection for the Pandavas. Being a great devotee, they were great devotees. Being highly virtuous, they were highly virtuous. They like resonated. Duryodhan was also his, you can say, like grandson, but not a devotee and not virtuous. So he was partial to the Pandavas, although he fought with the Kauravas. And when the Pandavas were victorious, he knew that they were victorious, but then seeing them in this opulent, aristocratic, kingly position, at last. But Krishna wanted to make Bhishma Dev happy in that way. And so he personally came. He came like the younger cousin. Yudhisthira by birth was older. And so being the elder amongst the brothers, he was respected amongst the brothers as something like a father, or as the elder brother in cultured society. Krishna liked to take the same position, the junior to Yudhisthira. He showed this in many ways, which we'll describe during the course of this time together. All three of these reasons for Krishna's personally accompanying the Pandavas demonstrates a very important quality that Krishna has, that we should pay special attention to, and that is Krishna's very, very personal loving nature. He does what he does because he has a very personal, loving nature. And with his devotees, Krishna especially exhibits that personal, loving nature. With these very, very extremely elevated devotees, Bhishma Dev and the Pandavas in particular, we find incredible exchanges, a very, very personal, loving reciprocation. Krishna does because it's pleasing to his devotee. Krishna does because it brings happiness to his devotee. Krishna does because it brings honor and appreciation and respect to his devotee. Krishna likes that. He's very personal. And he reciprocates with the love of his devotee. That's the person who we're serving. He's that kind of person. Supremely so. So, the application point is, when we're doing the services that we do, we should understand that's the nature of our master. I remember once in a lecture in New York, Prabhupada described this quality of Krishna in resounding tones. He's it was very dramatic. The tone of his voice went up and up and up and up. He said, Krishna is not ungrateful. Any service that anyone does, if they come to the temple and if they just turn one screw, Krishna will never forget that service that one renders. And the temple room burst out, Hari Bol, Prabhupada. Krishna notices. Whatever service, little service, little service, Krishna notices. And Krishna never forgets. We bind ourselves to Krishna and Krishna to us through the medium of devotional service. It's not like purchasing Krishna. It's binding Krishna with love. Just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu describing in relation to Haridas Thakur and Vasudev Datta. He would say, you have purchased me. With your qualities, I declare it to everyone, I am Vasudev Dutt's man. He can sell me in the marketplace for whatever price he likes. Do not believe otherwise. Please understand, I am Vasudev Dutt's property. He said it over and over again. He can do with me, he can sell me at any price. I belong to him. Please don't doubt it. And say it again. Krishna, or Lord Chaitanya, was Krishna himself, becomes so attracted by the mood of sacrifice and service unto others and unto the personality to fulfill the desire of the Supreme Lord, understanding the desire of the Supreme Lord, acting to fulfill the desire of the Supreme Lord. Krishna gives himself. Now, this is something that Rupa Goswami analyzes in Nectar Devotion. Krishna can very easily give material benedictions. You want this, you want that, sure, no problem. Liberation? That's also available. Devotional service? That's very rare, because through devotional service you can purchase Krishna. Or control Krishna. In this world, everyone's so eager to control things, possess things, own things, enjoy things. And the devotee doesn't care for those. Why? They simply want to serve Krishna. And that mood of wanting to serve Krishna is so rich and powerful. Krishna places himself at the disposal of his devotee. This was the realization of the illiterate Brahmin in Sri Rangam, who couldn't properly pronounce the words of Bhagavad Gita, as simple as the Sanskrit of Bhagavad Gita is. And so the other brahmanas would laugh at him. But he was crying in great joy and love with the understanding that Krishna, this is the point here, Krishna reciprocates with the love of his devotees so much that he becomes the source of... This is Krishna. So, it's not that as devotees we think, oh great, I can manipulate Krishna. But when there's... And Krishna knows when some idea like that is there. But when there's genuine mood of service, you have Krishna on your side. And when you have Krishna on your side, you're sure to be victorious. That's Sanjaya's conclusion in Bhagavad Gita. Wherever there's Krishna, Arjuna, surely there'll be victory. And in life, there's so many challenges. And it's not just, yeah, I want victory, and I don't want defeat. It's, we want Krishna. We don't want to be without Krishna. And when we have that attitude, Krishna will always be with us, and in an absolute, ultimate sense, we'll always be victorious. Victory over illusion. Param vijayate. Sri Krishna Sankirtana. The comparison given here is Kuvera and his Guyakas. Kuvera, what's Kuvera's position amongst the demigods? Treasurer. He's the richest. So Yudhisthira is compared to Kuvera, the opulence of the king. Because the Pandavas were for so long in exile, living in the forest, even as small children, before they returned back to the royal palace, they were always in this difficult position. Difficult position is now over. Grandfather Bhishma is very happy. And that's what Krishna wanted. He wanted to make Bhishma happy. The devotee wants to make Krishna happy. Krishna wants to make the devotee happy. And there's a competition, and guess who wins? Krishna wins. And that makes him happy, to see his devotee happy. Seeing Grandfather Bhishma lying on the ground like a demigod fallen from the sky, the Pandava king Yudhisthira, along with his brothers and Lord Krishna, bowed down before him. Now, the Pandavas were conscious of Krishna's position. Grandfather Bhishma was conscious of Krishna's position, right? In the Rajasuya Yajna, he declared Krishna's position. He declared it happily and boldly and deliberately, disturbing the heck out of Shishupal. He knew that Krishna was the personality of Godhead, and he wasn't bewildered or hesitant to declare it. Krishna knew that he knew. Still, what is Krishna doing? He comes before Bhishma Dev and bows down. What's Krishna doing? Contradicting? Krishna's acting, he's performing a leela in which he's demonstrating by his personal conduct the standards of etiquette. You can say Vaishnava etiquette. but standards of etiquette. When you're before an elder and senior personality, bow down. Whoever you may be, personality of Godhead, you bow down. And not just in a ritualistic way, fully showing his respect. Just a comment here. Etiquette is not just... It is behavior, but it's more than just behavior. Behavior means certain actions that you do and don't do. And that's etiquette. But etiquette, or a cultured person, more than just does this and doesn't do that. Their disposition is according to what you do and what you don't do. In other words, carrying a mood of respect when offering obeisances to Bhishma Dev. Certainly that's what Yudhisthira was feeling. And that's what Krishna was feeling. Krishna likes that. That's our master. That's our Lord. He likes in his leelas where there are persons who are his superiors. And he treats those who are his elders as superiors. He likes the affection of Mother Jasoda and Nanda Maharaj. Krishna likes it. He likes it more than the reverent hymns of the Vedas. Just like in the Brahma Vimohan Leela, the prayers that Brahma offers in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam are so wonderful. But Krishna was just like, you know, when's Brahma going to finish? Because I want to go back with the cowherd boys and have lunch. Hurry up, Brahma, where are you? Nice prayers. Okay, great, great. Let me go be with the cowherd boys. He's attracted to that informal, confidential love. So when we do things in Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, we should do with feeling. We're offering prayers and offering respect and participating in arati. It's not just a ritual. There's ritual components involved, but the real spirit is the devotion with which we render. And with the devotion that we render, we will experience reciprocation. Very important. Very important. So Krishna is teaching by his example, Vaishnava etiquette. And we should also, we're as Vaishnavas within the society of other, so many other than Vaishnavas, we have an opportunity by example to teach not just behaviors but the proper mood of respecting other living entities and seeing them as parts and parcels of Krishna and taking according to their position appropriate actions and speech to remind persons of Krishna. We remind devotees in one way and we remind innocent people in another way and we stay away from the demoniac people in another way. Just to see the chief of the descendants of King Bharat or Bhishma, all the great souls in the universe, namely the rishis, among the demigods, brahmanas and kings, all situated in the quality of goodness, were assembled there. The passing of Grandfather Bhishma was a universal event. So he came from other planets to be present, just as Krishna personally came to be present, to honor the occasion, to satisfy Grandfather Bhishma, to witness and bring auspiciousness to the passing of the soul of Bhishma into the spiritual realm. All of them assembled there on hearing the news of the great warrior's impending death. Now the next section starts listing some of the personalities who were present. Parvat Muni, Narada, Domya, Vyas, and so forth. So we'll take that up tomorrow. Now, why is it that great rishis, the rishis, those who instruct the demigods on other planetary systems, came to this earth to witness the passing of Grandfather Bhishma? Who's this personality, Grandfather Bhishma? So now we'll go into a little Mahabharata detail. Grandfather Bhishma is described as one of the eight Vasus. In Madhvacharya's writing, he describes the demigods being 33 million, and principal amongst the 33 million are three categories. The sons of Aditi, or the Adityas, the Vasus, and the Rudras, those three groups. And Bhishma Dev was in the category of the eight Vasus. And Bhishma Dev took place. Parshuram was unable to defeat Bhishma Dev. The father of Parashuram informed Parashuram after a number of days of fighting, "You won't be able to defeat him. He's one of the Vasus." No, Parashuram is the personality of Godhead, but so he can defeat anybody, but that's what his father indicated. So how the Bhishma Dev, as one of the Vasus, came to earth, because they're on the heavenly planetary regions. How did he come to earth? Is described in Mahabharata. There was a situation where, one time, the eight Vasus and their wives were traveling about the universe. And one of the places that they came to was the hermitage of Vashishta. And the wife of one of the Vasus, the Vasu named Dio, that was his name, Dio, she saw the Kamadenu of Vashishta, and she said to her husband, "Can we take that Kamadenu home somehow?" So, hearing the inspired words of his wife, Dio discussed with the other Vasus, and they decided they would take Kamadenu by force. And when they did so, Vashishtha cursed them, that you will all die. Except the seven of you who didn't actually do the stealing, shortly after you take your birth, you will again return to your position in heaven. But this Dyo, he who actually did the stealing, he'll have to stay a long time in the earthly realm. And he'll exhibit the qualities of a great hero. So that eighth Vasu, Dyo, became Bhishma Dev. Now how Bhishma Dev became the son of Santanu has a whole other narration. There was a great king named Maha Abhishek, and Maha Abhishek by dint of his service to the Supreme Lord Vishnu, at the end of his life he entered Vaikuntha. And one time, from his position of, as a resident of Vaikuntha, one time he came to pay a visit to Brahma in Satyaloka. When he was visiting Brahma in Satyaloka, also present was the celestial mother Ganga. And as circumstance would have it, a breeze came and the garments of Ganga moved to the side, and Maha Abhishek became very attracted in a lustful way upon seeing parts of Ganga's body, and she saw the glance of Maha Abhishek, and she exchanged glance with him. Lord Brahma detected this impropriety on both of their parts and cursed them that they would leave their heavenly and their elevated position and take birth on earth. Maha Abhishek became Maharaj Santanu, and Ganga became an earthly female form named Ganga. So one day when Santanu was in the forest, Ganga made an appeal to Brahma for leniency. So the appeal that he made, he responded to the appeal by telling Ganga that you will remain on earth for some time, and the eight Vasus would become your sons. And after each of them was born, after all of that, you can again return to your heavenly position. So the understanding was that the eighth, she understood like this, the eighth child would remain on earth for some time. So when Santanu was traveling in the forest and saw Ganga, he immediately became attracted. And he courted her and requested her to become his queen. Ganga agreed to become his queen on one condition, that he would never speak anything that would be disturbing for her. So he agreed. After some time, a son is born. And Ganga took the son, and after the child was born, threw the child in the Ganges. Santanu didn't speak anything because he had given this promise. He wouldn't speak anything that would be disturbing to her. And this happened seven times. This was the seven of the Vasus just after their birth would return to their demigod position. But Dio, the one who had taken the Kamadhenu, or attempted to steal the Kamadhenu of Vasishta, was the eighth child. I skipped something important. Yeah, the father, well, it's not so important, it's just a detail. The father of Santanu, his name was Pratipa. And Pratipa was engaged in the forest in austerities. Ganga Devi saw Pratipa, and she became attracted to Pratipa. And right while he was engaged in his austerities, she came and sat on his lap. And indicated she was attracted to him. She sat on his right thigh, and he said, according to our culture, the daughter-in-law sits on the right thigh. And so, no question, I can't marry you, you sat on my right thigh. And so, my son will marry you. And Pratipa's son was Santanu, and then this attraction. Santanu, Ganga, the promise was made, I will not speak anything that will disturb you. So when the eighth son was born, Santanu spoke up, Ganga, please don't do this. You've killed seven of our children. Leave this one at least. So with that, she invoked the promise that he had made. You promised that you would not speak anything that would disturb me. Now you've done that, I'm leaving. And she took the eighth child and left. There's poor Santanu. Seven children killed, one, the eighth child, taken away by his dear wife. So Ganga Devi then lived in the forest with Deva Vrata. She named the child Deva Vrata for 32 years, and she and Vasishta trained Devavrata in the knowledge of the Vedas. And she entrusted Devavrata to Parashuram. This becomes important later. She entrusted Parashuram to train him in military science, Dhanur Ved. Can't have a better Dhanurveda teacher than Parashuram. So he was properly educated and trained as a Kshatriya would be trained. Ganga saw to that. 32 years later, Santanu again was in the forest, and he saw this young man. Not knowing who he was, he became very attracted, and as he approached, suddenly Devavrata disappeared. And he had this intuitive sense. This would be about the age of my son. So then he searched and searched and found Ganga and pleaded with Ganga, please give me my son to care for. I want to place him as the king, my successor. Ganga did like that. He gave the son to Santanu and she left back to the heavenly kingdom. So now Santanu has placed Devavrata as his successor. He's not formally installed him as a king, but he's the, I have this term, prince regent. He's like, you know, in line. A public ceremony where it's proclaimed he will become the successor king. Sometime shortly after that, again, Santanu was traveling in his kingdom and he smells a fragrance of musk, very, very strong. And he follows that fragrance and it takes him right into the house of a fisherman. And he understands the source of that fragrance is the daughter of the fisherman. And he sees the beautiful girl who is the daughter of the fisherman, and he requests the fisherman that he give his daughter in marriage. So you know this narration. The fisherman, one would might think, you know, fisherman is being asked that his daughter become the queen of the whole kingdom. And the fisherman didn't yield right away. The reason he didn't yield right away is because his daughter, Satyavati, had received some benediction from Parashara Muni that her son would become king. So he was playing his cards closely. So put that scene on hold and we'll go to Satyavati. Who is Satyavati? Satyavati was a heavenly damsel who had been cursed to leave the heavenly realms and to take birth on earth as a fish. Detail isn't described. At least I don't know. The celestial maiden was named Adrika. Adrika became a fish by a curse. Then there was one king, Uparicharvasu. Somehow semen from this king fell into the Ganga, the fish swallowed the semen, and two humans were conceived in the body of the fish. So it's not that the maid became the fish, the maid became born from that fish. Somehow. So a fisherman caught the fish, and when he opened up the fish and he looked inside, much to his surprise, there's a young boy and a young girl in the belly of a fish. Must have been a big fish. And he was so astonished, he didn't know what else to do other than give the the young boy, young girl within the belly of the fish to the king. The king decided that he would accept the young boy to become the king, successor king of the Matsya province. And the daughter, this bad fishy smell, so he named her Matsya Gandhi. She smells like a fish. And he gave her back to the fisherman. You keep her. So the fisherman raised Matsya Gandhi, and being a very pious man, he thought, one thing that may be of benefit for my daughter is if she can do a service of taking the service as a boat conveyor, conveying people across the river. One day she may get the blessing of some sage. So that was his wish for his daughter. So one day Parashramuni was crossing the river, and he got on the boat of Matsya Gandhi, somehow transcended the fishy smell. And as he was crossing the river, he was doing an astrological calculation. And Parashara was calculated that at this very moment of time, an incarnation of the personality of Godhead will appear. And so as to not lose the moment, this window of opportunity, this auspicious moment, he requested the young girl, Matsya Gandhi, to be the bearer of that child. He would be the father and she would be the mother. And she said, how can I do that? I'm not married. And he said, don't worry. This can be arranged in such a way that you won't lose your virginity. Well, I don't know how you can do that, but supposing I don't lose my virginity, but that I'm carrying a child for 9 months, everyone's going to see there's pregnancy. He said, no, don't worry. This child will be born in such a way that just after pregnancy, the mature child will be born. In fact, won't even be in an infant. He'll very quickly grow to an adult form. And she said, well, you know, here we are right in the middle of the river and everyone can see in all directions. Don't worry. I'll create an island and put a mystical fog around the island that no one will be able to see. So she agreed. You're a great sage. This is somehow some divine purpose is in all of this. And so Parashara conceived Vyas in the womb of Matsya Gandhi. And when Vyas was born, Parashara departed from Matsya Gandhi with the following benediction. For accepting this position of service, I give you the following benedictions. That your fishy smell will become very, very fragrant like celestial musk. And your son, the sons born of you after Vyas, will become king. So she was very happy. And when Vyas was born, just as Parashara said, he became of adult stature. And he left. Right away, he left. And he said, my dear mother, if you simply remember me at any point in time, I will come and I will assist you in whatever it is that you require. So she invoked that benediction later. So now Parashara is on the other side of the river, and Matsya Gandhi goes home and says, Dad, guess what?
Well, one thing I can say for sure, the bad fishy smell is gone. There's smells celestial. Tell me what happened. And she told them, this is what happened. Parashara Muni, Vyas was born, this benediction and the other benediction. My son will become king. So now, back to Santanu. Santanu asking the fisherman, I would like to have your daughter as a queen. The fisherman says, well, that won't be possible because my daughter should have as her son the next king. Well, Santanu said, how is that possible? Because Devavrata, he is the prince regent. He's my firstborn son. He's the incumbent king. So the fisherman said, well, I'm sorry. You can't marry my daughter. So Santanu went back to the palace, very unhappy. Mahabharata describes, he just went to bed and couldn't get out of bed. He was like singing the blues. He was really woo woo, singing the blues, unhappy. And the whole palace, the whole royal family could understand something's wrong with Santanu. So Devavrata, he asked the sages and the ministers of the king's court, what happened? What's going on? Why Santanu? So they informed him what happened. Without any further consideration, Devavrata immediately went to the house of the fisherman and personally made the appeal on behalf of his father. And you know what happened. When he went to the fisherman said, I'm sorry, I already told Santanu. The answer is no. Why not? Because my daughter will become, should have as her son, the king, the next king. So Devavrata said, no problem. I'm supposed to be the king. I hereby take a vow. I will not become king. Well, that's good, but not good enough, because supposing you get married, although you're not king, and you have a son, then your son, if born first, would become the king. And then my daughter's son would not become king. So Devavrata stood up and said, then I take a second vow. I'll never become married. And the fisherman said, very well. Right now, I give you my daughter. You can take her to Santanu, and she can become his queen. Showers of flowers came from the sky, and the resounding sound, Bhishma, Bhishma, for taking such a strong vow. So that's the meaning. Devavrata became Bhishma. And when the daughter was presented to Santanu, who was just in this despondent state, lying in his bed, and brought Satyavati, he was so amazed at the sacrifice. Santanu must have been a very powerful personality, just at such an utterance, to give a benediction like that to his son. So Bhishma was the eighth Vasu. Santanu was previously Maha Abhishek, is descending from the heavenly realms situation with both father and son. So Bhishma was now in the position where he was trained in military skill, he was learned in the arts of the Vedas, he was qualified as a Kshatriya, but he would not become married. And he would not become king. But so he stayed being royal family. He was cared for as a member of the royal family. And so many arrangements were made by Grandfather Bhishma in service to the other members of the royal family. He arranged the marriage of Dhritarashtra. He arranged the marriage of Pandu. He arranged the marriage of Vichitravirya. He was like a matchmaker kind of guy, although he was a brahmachari. He was in service to the royal family. And that helps give some picture of why he was also in the service of the Kauravas, because by religious principle he was being maintained by the royal family, and therefore he was duty bound to serve the royal family. Duty bound. And Bhishma was a man of duty. He was a man of virtue. He did things because they were to be done. And he stood on that firmly. And that's the morality part of Mahabharata. The higher principle is, he's a devotee of Krishna. One can be a moralist for Krishna, or one can just be a moralist. Atheist. It's possible to be a moralist atheist, or a follower of the rules of Varna and Ashram for the sake of material elevation, not for the sake of satisfying Krishna. Bhishma was for the sake of satisfying Krishna. Whatever it was that he did, it was for satisfying Krishna, because he was a great devotee. And because he was a great devotee, Krishna reciprocated with that devotion, because that's Krishna. So, a little bit more Mahabharata. In the verse that we read, text 5, Sutta is saying, just to see the chief of the descendants of King Bharat, or Bhishma Dev. So Bhishma Dev was in the line of the kings from Bharat Maharaj. There's a very interesting, really long, detailed genealogy of the line, the family line of Bhishma Dev. In that family line of Bhishma Dev, we find Puru and Yadu before Bharat, and after Bharat comes Kuru. So he's in the Kuru dynasty. He's in the royal family as a descendant of Bharat. Just like Yudhisthira, Arjuna, or best of the Bharats. So, in that family line, royal family, it's from the lunar dynasty descendancy goes Vishnu, Brahma, Atri, and Chandra. So he's in the moon dynasty of kings. There's the sun, solar dynasty and the lunar dynasty. The Kuru dynasty is in the dynasty in which Krishna appeared is the lunar dynasty. The dynasty in which Ram appeared is the solar dynasty. So, descendants of the moon, Chandra. Forget exactly how it's going to connect these two. Because he was the... Yes. Because he was the son of Santanu with Ganga as his mother, but he would have no sons, so Satyavati's sons would then become the successors of the throne of Santanu. With me? So, through Satyavati, two sons were born who were destined to become the heirs to the throne. And those two sons, one was Vichitravirya, and the other was Chitrangada. When Chitrangada was just a boy, he was crowned as the king. And shortly after his being crowned as king, Santanu died. While Chitrangada was still just a young fellow, there was a Gandharva of the same name, Chitrangada, who was really arrogant and proud, and thought, who is this imposter Chitrangada claiming to be the king of the whole earth? Who is this small fry, Chitrangada? And he came and declared war against Chitrangada, the king. And he's just a young fellow. A battle went on that lasted for a year. And the young Chitrangada was killed, leaving Vichitravirya, the second son of Santanu and Satyavati, to become the king. There was no queen for Vichitravirya. But meanwhile, there was the announcement of the Swayamvar ceremony of the daughters of the king of Kashi. So, the elder Brahmachari, Bhishma, went to take part in the Swayamvar ceremony. And the other kings were objecting, hey, what's going on? You're a brahmachari. You couldn't marry these girls anyways. And he said, I've not come here for my own marriage. I've come here for the marriage of Vichitravirya. And in the Mahabharata, he gives a detailed lecture on 8 different categories of marriage. And after the lecture, he then said, so I'm going to take all 3 daughters, and if anybody wants to fight me, go right ahead. He then didn't even kidnap, he just like defied them. So the kings did battle with Bhishma. Bhishma was very happy to have battle. And including the list of kings that were defeated was Shalva. And so he took all three daughters, Amba, Ambika, and Ambalika, back to Hastinapur and introduced them. Hey, Vijayatravirya, guess what? Guys for you. Oh, thanks, Bhishma. So, just before the marriage was to take place, Amba confided in Bhishma, I can't go through with this marriage because I've already given my heart to Shalva. In fact, you know, we've kind of like exchanged love notes, and you know, he was committed to marry me, and I'm committed to, I've given my heart to Shalva. Woo, woo, woo. And so Bhishma said, no problem, you can go back and marry Shalva, that's quite okay. So when Amba went back to marry Shalva, Shalva said, no way, can't do it. You've been touched by another man, and you know how it is in our culture, can't marry you. You go back and, you know, you figure it out. But I've given my heart to you. No, sorry. Go back. It wouldn't be virtuous. Shalvas. Yeah. So, Amba went back. And what to do? You know, Vijayatravirya didn't want to marry her because she's given her heart to somebody else. And Bhishma didn't know what to do. So the Brahmana suggested, maybe you should marry her. Because it's, after all, you're the one whose hand touched her hand, and Vijayatravirya didn't. He didn't. I can't do that. I have taken a vow and not marry. So Amba's in a real fix. This becomes very, it grows and grows and grows and grows. So Amba went to the sages, and she decided, you know, this is just my misfortune that I can't marry the man who I wanted to marry, and I can't marry the man who I'm supposed to marry. So I guess it's just my misfortune. I'll go to the forest and become a mendicant and just try to purify myself for my misdeeds, whatever it is. So she went to the hermitage where the sages were and requested shelter. And, you know, they were saying, well, wait a minute, this is not very ordinary. We'll have to have a sage conference and decide, you know, whether we're going to let you stay here or not. And after consideration, they permitted her to stay, but they said, you know, Bhishma's spiritual master was Parashuram. If you go to Parashuram and plead your case, maybe he can insist that Bhishma marry you. Even though you're not keen on marrying Bhishma, at least you'll have a husband. So she went to Parashuram, cried her eyes out. Oh, what am I to do? Don't worry, I'll go speak to my disciple. And so this discussion between Bhishma and Parashuram takes place. It's very important and instructive. Parashuram asked Bhishma, why are you doing like this? You've kidnapped the girl at her Swayamvar ceremony, and now you refuse to marry her. Well, I didn't kidnap her for myself, it was for Vijayatravirya. But she said she can't marry Vijayatravirya because she's given her heart to Shalva, and Shalva won't accept her, so, you know, I don't know what to do. Yeah, you should marry her. I said, how can I marry her? I've taken a vow to not marry. Parashuram became angry. And when Parashuram gets angry, better watch out. he said, look, I've given you an instruction. You should marry her. So either you marry her or you fight me. And then Bhishma said, some moral instruction here, he said that there are, according to scriptures, there are three principal reasons or conditions when a disciple may not take the instruction of the spiritual master. One of them is when the spiritual master is altogether corrupt in his standards of morality and religious principle. I forget what the second one is. It's important. I'll look it up. He gave the second one. He said the third one is where the instructions are directly contrary to religious principle. And there's no problem with the first two, but this one is directly contrary to religious principle. I've taken a vow and you're asking me to break the vow. I can't break my vow. I'm a Kshatriya. I'm bound to my vows. And so I guess it only means one thing. We'll have to have a fight. And I suggest that the place for the fight be at Kurukshetra. Because by Kurukshetra the Ganga flows. Oh, Parashuram suggested. Where the Ganga flows, that will be very beneficial. Because when you die, I can place your body in the Ganga. And after all, Ganga is your mother, and it'll be very appropriate. Sacred place. We'll meet you at Kurukshetra. Bring your weapons. So various efforts were made. When they reached Kurukshetra, Ganga pleaded with Parashuram, Ganga pleaded with Bhishma, please don't go through with this. But they were determined to go through. So the fighting took place and went on for some number of days, something like 30 days. And at the end of that period of time, Bhishma Dev was wondering. Yeah. At the beginning, Bhishma asked permission from Parashuram. Parashuram gave his permission for the battle. And then he went forward. And there, you know, sometimes this side was winning, sometimes, you know how the battle descriptions go. It looked like this side was going to win, then it suddenly moved the other direction, and the other side was... But it was... They're both equally powerful, it appeared. One evening, Bhishma Dev had a dream in which the Vasus appeared in his dream. He said, don't become discouraged. We're going to give you a very special weapon. With this very special weapon, he'll be able to defeat Parashuram. They gave him the weapon. Narada came the next morning and told him, don't use it. And the father of Parashuram came the next morning to Parashuram and said, just surrender. This fighting is useless. I'm instructing you. Just surrender. Just give up fighting. So Bhishma is ready to use this invincible weapon, but Narada instructed him not to use it, and it all climaxed with Parashuram saying he just dropped his weapons. And when he dropped his weapons, Bhishma came and placed his head at Parashuram's feet. And the battle was over. So Parashuram went and informed Amba, sorry, Mataji, I tried my best. But I couldn't defeat my own disciple. So I don't know what to tell you. So she got really toasted. Oh, what is the use? I know. I'll go into the forest and undergo austerities with the determination to destroy Bhishma. So she underwent severe austerities for years, became emaciated. And at one point, Mother Ganga herself came and spoke to Amba, said, you know, what mentality is this? These intense, severe austerities, just so that you can destroy another? So something like, the detail I can't remember exactly, but something like half of your body will become a river. And most of the year that river will dry up. And only parts of the year will that river flow. But she continued and determined and determined and determined and determined and determined. And finally Lord Shiva came and, you know, Mataji, what is your desire? Why these severe austerities? I want to destroy Bhishma. So, very well, I can make an arrangement that you can, when you die, you'll take birth again in a woman's body. But later that woman's body will be transformed into a man's body, and that man's body you'll be able to destroy Bhishma. Great! So she jumped in a fire and died, so that she could hurry up and be born again in a woman's body that later became transformed into a man's body, and that was Shikhandi. So Bhishmadev disclosed this whole history of who Shikhandi was. It was actually Amba in the get back at Bhishma mood. And so she got this benediction from Lord Shiva that she would be born as a woman and then later transformed into a man. So there's a whole other story, how Shikhandi was born as a woman and later became a man. But then in the army of the Pandavas, Shikhandi fought on the side of the Pandavas. So Bhishma said, if you put Shikhandi in the front line, I'll not fight, because I'll not fight a woman. Although he, or she, is now a he was a she. He was a woman, and I'm not going to fight a woman. So if Shikhandi is in the front row, front line of the battle, I'm not going to fight. I'll drop my weapons and you can kill me. So that's what happened. Very complicated. How Shikhandi was born as a woman and then became a man is another detail. We'll go into that later point. So Bhishmadev, or the picture is, Bhishmadev is on the moral side, this incredible personality that stood for virtue, very much like Yudhisthira stood for virtue. Bhishmadev stood for virtue. So naturally there was this very strong affinity between the two. So much of what Bhishmadev taught was in terms of morality. When you do your translating, I'll give you a copy of this. This is just one example out of dozens and dozens of examples from Mahabharata where Bhishma Dev gives moral instructions. So, Vidura represents a person who gives moral instructions. Bhishma Dev represents a person who gives moral instructions. Yudhisthira represents a person in Mahabharata who gives moral instructions. There's so much moral instruction in Mahabharata. But now, back to Srimad Bhagavatam. The emphasis on Srimad Bhagavatam is attachment to the lotus feet of Krishna. It's not that it's absent in Mahabharata, it's just spoken of more in Mahabharata. It's like in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the fifth and sixth chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, Vyas is lamenting or feeling despondency even after having completed all of the Vedas, which includes Mahabharata. And the question, why is that despondency? The answer given by Narada is not that you wrote anything wrong, but you gave inordinate amount of emphasis on those things which can elevate the soul to a higher planetary situation, the situation of piety and in the heavenly realms. But you haven't sufficiently given emphasis on the personality of Godhead and becoming fixed at his lotus feet, which is what Srimad Bhagavatam is doing. So there's this emphasis or contrasting picture. So here's a little section. I'll try to go through it quickly. It's from the Shanti Parva of Mahabharata, where Yudhisthira is asking Bhishma Dev, how can a living entity become freed from miseries? That's a nice question. Respected grandfather, in this material world, the conditioned souls are taking so many difficulties. Please tell me how they can be freed from all miseries. Bhishma Dev replied, my dear king, the following people are free from miseries. There's a list of 44. First, the Brahmana, who has controlled his mind by following the scripture regulations of the four ashrams and behaves in accordance with such regulations. Two, one who is not envious can become free from miseries in this world. Three, the one who is very regulated. Four, the one who controls his material desires. Five, the one who does not react to another's harsh speech. Six, the one who does not physically retaliate with an aggressor. Seven, the one who always gives but never asks for anything. Eight, the one who gives shelter to a guest. Nine, the one who never criticizes. 10. The one who studies Shastra regularly. Mode of goodness. 11. The one who knows scriptural codes. The one who always serves his parents. The one who does not sleep in the daytime. The one who is free from all from the sins of mind, speech, and action. The one who never troubles any living entity. The king who is not greedy for the wealth of his citizens. The king who always protects his country from invasion from all directions. 18. The one who never commits illicit sex. 19. The soldier who is never scared of death but always fights according to Shastra to win. 20, the one who never lies, even when his life is at stake, etc. There's 44 items. These are moral instructions. You know, the instructions we hear in the Bhagavatam or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings is Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. Hearing and chanting the glories of the personality of Godhead. Bhagavad Dharma. There's the emphasis in Srimad Bhagavatam. Framing a God-centered life around principles of morality and codes of ethics and self-control and selflessness and qualities of goodness, Mahabharata. So the presenters of such things include Bhishma, Vidura, Yudhisthira, particularly prominent. And the consequences for those who do not live their life according to that principle, that's Mahabharata also. So we'll continue with chapter 9 tomorrow morning. Hare Krishna. So should we have questions or just go right into translation? What would you like?